We interrupt this broadcast with some important news.
Let's rewind and check out the biggest news stories from this week. It's time for Taiwan This Week.
Good evening and welcome to Taiwan This Week with me, your host Gavin Phipps. And I'm joined in the studio this evening by Dimitri Buyas of TVBS News.
Hi, good evening.
And regular commentator Ross Feingold.
Good evening.
And we'll begin this week's show with the latest news about the ongoing Sudan dye-tainted food issue, scandal, controversy, bloody great mess, or however you wish to describe it. Now, on Wednesday, the Food and Drug Administration's Director General announced that overseas manufacturers or exporters who sold food products to Taiwan that have tested positive for Sudan dyes are permanently banned from exporting the same type of items, such as the contaminated chili powder or its raw ingredients to Taiwan. Businesses here in Taiwan that have imported food products contaminated by Sudan dyes are also banned from importing the same type of items again for an unspecified length of time. Now, the move is one of a series of measures that the FDA head told reporters are aimed at better protecting consumers. Now, according to the FDA big honcho, products found to contain Sudan dyes during border inspections will be confiscated and destroyed as early as next week. Now, contaminated food items from the same country of origin with the same commodity code will be subject to a 100% shipment-by-shipment inspection. Now, data provided by the FDA shows that a total of 22 shipments of chili powder and its raw ingredients have tested positive for Sudan dyes since the tainted chili powder issue first made the headlines early last month, while a total of 205,004 kilograms of chili powder and other products in which the chemical dye has been found, and that includes over 56 seasoning items under different brands, have been recalled. Now, the same day that was happening, the Kaohsiung District Court ordered the head of the Jinjiang International Company to be detained on suspicion of allegedly violating the Act governing food safety and sanitation by knowingly selling chili powder containing Sudan Red. The suspect was questioned and released on bail on Tuesday, but then disappeared, and an arrest warrant was then issued for the man's, arrest. Prosecutors say that Li Yenting had claimed that his arrest was illegal, and he's been accused of importing chili powder containing the carcinogenic industrial dye through 10 companies here in Taiwan and one in China, using the names of several relatives and friends. And prosecutors say the 10 companies have been importing products containing Sudan 3 since 2018. And on Thursday, Premier Chen Jianren announced that a fund aimed at helping small and medium-sized enterprises better deal with food safety inspections will be established. Now, according to the Cabinet spokesperson, the Premier instructed Cabinet Secretary General Li Meng Yan to meet with representatives from government agencies to discuss establishing the fund to increase the efficiency of food safety management. Now, the head of the Cabinet's Food Safety Office says the fund will help the SMEs check whether their products meet compliance requirements, as such companies are unable to meet the cost of testing for any contaminants. And the Cabinet today is meeting with the central and local governments to discuss measures to strengthen, food safety. So, Ross, we talked about this when it first hit the proverbial fan some weeks ago, and we sort of jested it'll be over soon and we'll move on to the next one, but we haven't moved on. We're still here.
One thing we could count on in Taiwan, in addition to typhoons during typhoon season and crappy weather during the winter, is food safety scandals. It's a recurring problem here in Taiwan. You described the efforts that the relevant agencies are trying to make at the border. And look, in normal times, they're not going to open every single shipment and test every single bottle that's inside a shipment of any food product. That's just the way the system works. There's only so much resources. But to be fair, they're doing the best they can, and they say there'll be 100% inspection on the relevant, what do we call it, Gavin? Spiked chili powder?
badly manufactured, I think, is the polite way you'd put it.
That's a bit of a word salad, though, to call it badly manufactured, especially if you've just eaten it. You could be spitting it out and cursing, hoping you don't get cancer from it. As a chili powder eater myself, I would just say I try to buy the international brands and hope that they have higher standards than some of these other brands that are looking for cheap additives to give the powder the nice red color.
Which is all well and good, but of course the problem with this issue is it's entered the food chain, which means that prepared, processed food and restaurant food likely contains it, because the government admitted 2 weeks ago that while we will sort the problem out, it will likely linger for a long time because the stuff is already in the food chain.
That's a good point. And as I said, maybe as a consumer, I go to the supermarket and I might buy the international brand of chili powder. that costs more. And understandably, the food chain, as you described it, whether that's the breakfast, the breakfast sandwich places, or other types of packaged food where this might appear, they're trying to keep costs down, and they do buy this kind of additive in bulk at the best price possible, and it is in the food chain. And chances are, Gavin, people are going to forget about this in a couple of weeks as the public moves on to some other scandal. A couple of months from now, Gavin, when you buy some packaged foods or you go to your favorite breakfast place and there's chili flavor, it might be from some spiked chili.
Dimitri, will you be rushing out anytime soon to have yourself a spicy hot pot?
Well, not really, because I guess this mishandling of the chili powder crisis by the administration, I think, also unveils a troubled arrogance and irresponsibility in the administration. The premier acknowledgement that the issue is systemic sharply contrasts with earlier statements and assurances of enhanced food safety in Taiwan. Also, the attempt by the Food Safety Office Director to equate the risk of chili powder with those of banning substances like coffee and tea has also incited widespread public indignation. So the incident has revealed the administration's tendency to politicize food safety issue, as demonstrated in handling the rectopamine findings in Taichung. I don't know if you remember this a couple of weeks ago. Instead of solving food safety concerns, meeting have degenerated into sessions of pointing fingers at Taichung city government without proper investigation. And the administration's reluctance to swiftly address this Sudan Red crisis has its defensive posture against criticism underlines its neglect of public health. And that's a major concern.
And Ross, what about the chap that had the 10 companies used to import this tainted product? And the 10 companies, the people that ran them were listed as his friends and family.
He'll need a good lawyer. He could call me up if we could give him a fee quote to defend him. The fact that some of the companies were established under friends and relatives' names, I don't think that's really a key issue here. The key issue is whether or not there's a company that imported chili powder with an impermissible additive or a dye. And the authorities, they're getting around to it. I'm partial somewhat to Dimitri's analysis, but I think we also have to be fair to the authorities, as I said earlier. They can't possibly test every single imported food, every bottle or every bag that comes through the border. They do random checks, and if there's a reason to do 100% check for specific products, as there is now, they will do that. But I think we do need to be fair to the customs and the quarantine and the other relevant agencies. They can't possibly open every food product that comes through the border. If they did, the price of imported food would be tremendous, and the delays would be extremely long.
And what about the Premier's point about there's going to be a government fund to help small and medium-sized enterprises pay for tests on possibly contaminated food?
Well, just like I said earlier, in Taiwan, one thing you could count on is typhoons in the summer. Another thing you can count on is crappy weather in the winter. And a third thing you could count on is when there's a problem, the government throws money at it. The Taiwan government seems to have endless amounts of money to subsidize different programs. They don't ever seem to have enough money to spend on defense, and they claim go to America crying poverty and they need handouts. But when it comes to a lot of issues that broadly we'll call the social spending kind of space, there's an endless amount of money for subsidies.
And what about punishments, Dimitri? Of course, we had the Ding Xing oil scandal some years ago, which was another rather far-reaching food scandal here. And of course, some people did go to prison.
Yes, in the end, but it will take another couple of maybe months and years to have the final ruling on this issue. So in the meantime, maybe the public wants to better understand what the government can or will do to improve food safety in Taiwan. So we started this Taiwan FDA agency a couple of years ago. So I guess maybe the public was expecting the agency to be more proactive. But if it's this is a widespread issue now, we've sampled products from mainland China, but it could be products from anywhere. It's not about the country of origin. It's about what's in your in the products that you eat.
And Ross, what about punishments for people who do this knowingly?
The law provides for the usual jail terms and fines. as Dimitri indicated, the court process and appellate process could literally take years. And I'll just say by the time it gets around to a jail sentence, most people will have forgotten about this because there'll definitely be future analogous food scandals in the future.
And Ross, someone gave you a job in the government and they said, Ross, clear this problem up overnight. What would you do?
It's difficult. You know, as I said earlier, you simply cannot test every single package of food that comes across the border or is produced domestically. So one way to mitigate the risk would be to provide more resources to the agencies that are responsible for testing imported food products or regulating domestic food manufacturers. But you can't have 100% coverage. I would say, though, that transparency is important once a problem has been discovered. Transparency and speed in the investigations. And unfortunately, Taiwan often seems to lack that.
And Dimitri, of course, this product originated in China, which one certain people might argue played into the hands of the government's China card.
Yeah, but tracing the origin of the component of a product is a challenge for every country. But in the situation of, because of the situation between Taiwan and China, and because of the miscommunication and the total absence right now actually of communication between the two sides of the Taiwan Strait, it's even easier for some individual and companies to mislabel products, to change the origin of their products. And we're letting agencies here in Taiwan unable to double check or crisscross this information to find out exactly where do the products come from. So they are taking advantage of a situation now between the two sides of the Taiwan Straits. So maybe it would be too easy to say that, well, Taiwan and China should discuss each such issues and find a consensus or maybe meet to discuss these challenges. But this is a political issue right now, so it won't happen over the next few years.
Because, of course, Ross, this stuff was exported to Taiwan, but obviously it comes from China, so the people in China are eating it as well.
Food scandals happen in every country around the world. I wouldn't take a guess that it happens more frequently in China than other places, but it certainly happens there.
But do you think the government should be helping the Chinese side to find out that this stuff is actually poisonous in their own country as well?
I think China is capable, if they have the will to, of inspecting their own food manufacturers. They don't need Taiwan's help.
And there were no bail there, I take it. Moving on now, and the Ministry of Foreign Affairs this week announced that it's introduced measures to strengthen information security at Taiwan's overseas offices. The announcement comes after the National Audit Office released a report on information security at the island's embassies and representative offices, which found that 33 of Taiwan's total of 109 foreign missions were using equipment or services that failed information security tests. Now, according to the Audit Office, the offices are using Chinese social media software installed on government-issued mobile phones and telecommunications services at 17 of the said missions, and some of them actually used equipment provided, well, by China. Now, the audit office said that as China has a monopoly over the local supply of telecoms equipment in certain countries, the replacement of said equipment will be rather difficult, and the foreign ministry has reported this issues to the Ministry of Digital Affairs, which apparently is reviewing the situation as we speak. Now, the foreign ministry also said that information security audits will be carried out on two levels from now on, that being a first level audit will be done by an official at each mission, while a second level review will be performed by a regional official. And an interministerial team will also visit the overseas offices annually to conduct inspections and training. Well, Ross, this is no big surprise, because as you pointed out to me in a conversation we had last week, mate, if you look at the business cards of people who work in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs here, lots of them have, like, Gmail and Yahoo email accounts on.
Yeah, I have a stack of business cards from Ministry of Foreign Affairs officers based overseas that has Yahoo, Gmail, email addresses. And that stack of business cards, Gavin, is taller than you. So if you're listening, MOFA, and we know the people, good people at MOFA, listen to this show religiously every Friday, you guys got to improve your game. You know, this is rather humiliating. You know, I wouldn't underestimate the seriousness of this situation. If the Taiwan government's auditors discover that they could hack in or access information in the information security technology space of Taiwan's overseas missions, then of course China has that possibility as well. We don't know for sure if China did, but the possibility is there. And I'm a bit disappointed that they said, we informed the digital ministry. You really should be able to handle this on your own. You do have IT experts who work for the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Part of their job is supposed to be to monitoring these issues. So you got to wonder, like, where have you been? You know, why have you let this kind of problem grow to such an extent that it now becomes an embarrassment? But I really would not underestimate how embarrassing this is for the Ministry of Foreign Affairs.
You're right. The Ministry of Digital Affairs should explain clearly why they haven't sorted these things out yet, because we've heard of government officials using apps or maybe chat rooms, and they're not actually secured enough.
Sorry to interrupt you. Just to clarify, I think it's the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, as I said, that needs to answer for this, not the Ministry of Digital Affairs. Ministry of Digital Affairs was not created to be the auditor of every single government agency's information technology, communications equipment, security. It's really up to the individual ministries, and all these ministries have in-house techies, for lack of a better word, who are supposed to be doing this. So, Dimitri, on that point, I have to disagree with you. This is not MOTA's job. It's the job of each agency.
There were the guys in the basement called the IT department.
Well, that's a good point. But it's, again, another weather balloon in the sky coming from China, because you still have to demonstrate first how these equipment and explain how these equipment arrives, or the software we're installing on the MOFAS computer, and how these software can be used to gather information about the Ministry of Affairs official duties. Now, spying or collecting information is not just made by countries and regions that are maybe in challenging Taiwan's sovereignty or Taiwan affairs. Even our friends and diplomatic allies can also try to collect information and data to support their own policies. So yes, there need to be an audit. Who's going to carry that audit? Well, we will see. But there needs to be an audit. And going just beyond using China as an excuse again, it's not just about China. They need to up their game and maybe find better equipment.
So, Ross, do you think one Mr. Joseph Wu should be going to the basement of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and talking to those chappies and girlies in the IT department?
Absolutely. And the Premier or the President should be asking Minister Wu what happened here. Well, why has this problem grown to such an extent? So there are people who have to answer to him, but he also has to answer to some other people as well. And hopefully, to use Dimitri's words, they up their game. I'm not going to be optimistic, though. I'm sure we'll discover 5 years from now that there's still some latent, unresolved information security issues at not just the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, but other agencies that have overseas personnel posted overseas. That includes the Ministry of Economic Affairs, the Overseas Compatriots Council, or whatever they're calling it this week after they took out Chinese from the name. So it's a number of agencies that have personnel posted overseas, and I would assume, and I think it's safe to assume, that it's a problem on all of their devices. So, you know, the officer from the National Immigration who's posted in the U.S. or the U.K. or somewhere in Southeast Asia, their devices probably have similar problems. I'm going to guess that some of these officers would say, well, I installed WeChat because all the overseas Taiwanese who live here in this city, fill in the blank, Bangkok, Vancouver, or Australia, where Taiwan has several offices, they're going to say, like, oh, the Taiwanese all use WeChat, so I needed WeChat to talk with them. We're going to hear excuses like that.
And moving away from that now, and Premier Chen Jianren this week, when he wasn't talking about food contaminants, well, he was busy dismissing calls for absentee voting, telling lawmakers at a legislative hearing that the government currently has no plans to adopt such a measure. The statement comes as opposition lawmakers are pressing the government to allow early voting or mail-in voting. They argue that the low turnout for January's just past presidential election is a sign that people should be allowed to use absentee voting, as they don't want to either go home home to where their households are registered, or they cannot go home because they are doing something else. Now, although acknowledging that the right to vote is protected in the Constitution and other laws, the Premier went on to say that election systems need to be strengthened and further planning and research needed to ensure that votes are confidential and election results are accurate and fair if absentee voting is to become a reality. Now, Interior Minister Lin Yiu-chung voiced his support for the Premier's opposition to absentee voting, saying it's currently not feasible for local and presidential elections, but it could be used for referendums. And the Cabinet approved a draft bill last month to allow absentee voting for said referendums for citizens who can't or simply don't want to return to their city or county in which they're registered. But the bill doesn't apply to citizens living overseas. Now, the head of the Central Election Commission this week supported that move, but he went on to cite concerns about election interference in absentee voting is opened to national elections. So, Dimitri, more talk of absentee voting and referendums might be okay, but national elections, big no-no. Because apparently, obviously, an official did cite the fact that certain countries have embassies in other countries where their citizens can go and cast ballots at an embassy. And, of course, Taiwan doesn't have an embassy in its biggest problem across the Taiwan Strait.
Well, back in 2002, the DPP strongly supported absentee voting, recognizing its crucial role in advancing democracy. But fast forward to 22 years later, their eagerness to implement such a system has unexpectedly diminished, so showing a significant change in stance. And this suggests that political motivations are more important than the core principles of democracy. The party frequently points to technical challenges as a reason to avoid facilitating remote voting, which raise questions in the age of the internet banking. So the DPP has also concerns about potential interference from China, using it as excuse to resist the change. So this reluctance to act swiftly on absentee voting legislation is a disappointment to many, indicating a preference for political advantage over the democratic rights of the Taiwanese people.
Of course, Russ, we could argue that they don't really act swiftly on very much.
This is truly pathetic. A country that's as advanced as Taiwan, with its extraordinary technological capabilities. One, like we were talking earlier, they're using Yahoo and Gmail addresses at their overseas missions. Now, two, they can't or won't implement absentee voting. The opinion voiced by the officials you cited who say, oh, we could do it for referendums but not for elected offices. I mean, what a load of BS that is. You know, there's really no justification for saying, oh, we could do it for a referendum but not for a legislator or even a president. I could understand the logic or the desire to do this in a phased way. So first we'll start with domestic absentee voting only, and then maybe in the future expand it out to people who are outside Taiwan, including in China. You know, this notion that they'll receive back from expatriates based in China hundreds of thousands of votes, that China opened up the envelope and changed the ballot or put in a fake ballot. I mean, that's really preposterous, in my opinion. You know, Taiwan's got to have some confidence in itself, and including the election agency. You have to have some confidence that if you get a ballot mailed back, you can determine whether or not it's a legitimate ballot or there's something wrong going on, and you have to toss that ballot out. I have faith in Taiwan. I don't know that Taiwan can do that. I don't know why the politicians and the elections agency don't have faith in their own capabilities to be able to determine if a mailed-in ballot was you know, or there's something suspicious about it. Frankly, you could say the same thing about online voting as well. I do think that starting with mailed-in votes, again, I get it if they want to start with domestic and then roll it out international. Given the IT problems at overseas missions, I don't think they should have voting at overseas missions, although, as was noted, some countries have that. My own country, the United States, does not have that. We cannot vote at our overseas posts, at embassies, consulates, or here in Taiwan at the American Institute in Taiwan. So you do have to apply for an absentee ballot and hope it reaches you and then fill it out and mail it back. That's the American method. But the time has certainly come, and I think this you know, silly excuses that the DPP are making is they just fear that, and there's no reason to believe this either, but they do fear that there'd be a deluge of absentee votes in favor of the Kuomintang, the Chinese Nationalist Party. And that's clearly why the DPP wants to slow walk this.
You thought it would take, I mean, the past 8 years, the DPP, Ross, has had a majority in the legislative UN, which means basically they could go to work on a Monday. They could stand around picking their fingers and picking their nose until Tuesday. Wednesday, they take a vote on whether to allow absentee voting for citizens in Taiwan. It will take 5 minutes.
Which day is the day for pushing and shoving and crowding the speaker's podium?
Yeah, we do that on Thursday, and then they vote on a Friday.
Well, you could say that about any unfinished business there, right? The DPP had 8 years of a legislative majority and the presidency where they could pretty much do whatever they wanted with limited ability of the opposition to block it. So if there's any public policy issue that they didn't take care of, they lost their chance to take care of it when they had unified control of government. But again, Gavin, I think absentee voting, the time has come for Taiwan to have that, especially keeping in mind that Taiwan, as we all know, and we love you government officials, and we love when you repeatedly say Taiwan is a democracy on the front lines of autocracy. So if you really mean that, then you shouldn't deny your citizens the right to vote simply because they're not able to be physically present in the location where their household registration is.
And of course...
But there is also a problem with the way they are framing the argument as a against the absentee ballot as a defense of the constitution integrity. So according to Article 129 of the Constitution, elections shall be by universal, equal, and direct suffrage and by secret ballot. And the DPP has crafted this narrative that absentee voting is illegal, subtly bending the law to suit their political interest. The opposition starks is a contrast with the successful implementation of absentee ballot voting globally, suggesting the DPP's real concern is not legality, but the fear of electoral disadvantage. The contradiction is their stance is further amplified by the chairman's prior criticism of the Constitution, calling the ROC Constitution a disaster, exposing a clear inconsistency when political gains are at stake. So again, the DPP has expressed fears of potential Chinese interference in absentee ballots. But actually, we all use apps. We can use internet banking to control, to manage our money. But we cannot use an app or use an envelope, not even send our ballot to just do basic thing as voting. In my country, we can vote in Taiwan. We can vote anywhere. Whether it's an embassy or a consulate, you are able to do it.
So Ross, as Dimitri pointed out there, it would obviously be quite easy to work out that if they received 500,000 votes from China back and they all voted for one person, it'd pretty much be a given there was something wrong with it.
Well, as I said earlier, you need to have confidence in your own ability to open up the envelopes and assess whether or not it appears that the ballot was doctored in some way. I just don't think that this is something that's beyond the capability of Taiwan's electoral officials. As I said earlier, I have confidence that they could do that. They don't seem to have confidence in themselves. But fine, you could, as I said earlier, you could do this in a phased rollout, right? You could start with domestic absentee voting. You could then roll it out to overseas mail ballots for the world, excluding the mainland. And then if the first couple of phases are successful, you could then roll it out to the mainland as well. And again, you have to be confident in your ability to open the envelope and assess whether or not it looks like something funny was done to the ballot. And then if you think so, then you throw the ballot out.
And of course, there's the Ministry of Digital Affairs to handle any digital ones.
Coming from the United States and having, because of my past involvement with the overseas Republicans, and currently I'm on the board of directors of a nonpartisan global expatriate advocacy organization where one of our important issues is the ease of access for absentee voting. So I have quite a bit of experience with this issue, Gavin. And I am not a fan of overseas digital voting. I think overseas mail-in ballots is sufficient. And again, that's why I'm suggesting this for Taiwan, and they could do it in a phased-in process. You start with domestic, you then roll it out to other countries, excluding China. And then if the first few phases are successful, you can then include mail-in ballots from China. But I would recommend Taiwan use mail-in ballots rather than anything online.
And staying with some cross-strait issues now, opponents and supporters of a bill seeking to allow Chinese spouses to obtain ROC citizenship in 4 years instead of the current six rallied outside the legislative UN on Tuesday of this week. The bill has been proposed by the KMT. Applications for citizenship by Chinese spouses come under the Act governing relations between the people of the Taiwan area and the mainland area, and not the Nationality Act, under which other foreign spouses' cases apply. Now, that process can take up to 8 years to complete and includes a citizenship test to prove they have basic Mandarin language skills and also have an understanding of the rights and obligations of ROC citizens. Foreigners wishing to become citizens in most cases must give up their original citizenship. Now, Chinese spouses don't have to undergo the citizenship test and have to cancel their household registration in China and secure a permanent resident certificate to stay in Taiwan before they can apply for a national ID card. That alone has become a rather sticky issue due to the status of cross-strait ties. Now, DPP lawmaker Huang Jie this week also proposed that Chinese spouses seeking to obtain citizenship here be obliged to take an oath of loyalty, a legally binding oath of loyalty, that being how the lawmaker described it. Now, according to Huang, the oath will be performed publicly and the text of said oath will be read aloud. And it says, "I completely renounce my former status as a citizen of the mainland area and my basic rights and obligations herein. I also vow that after becoming a citizen of the Taiwan area, I will defend its democracy and freedom, abide by its constitution and laws, and fulfil my civic obligations." And Huang says the text will then be signed and stamped by the applicant and sent to the Ministry of the Interior to be archived. So, Ross, first of all, issue with Chinese spouses back down to 4 years from six. Obviously, this has irked not just the DPP, but other foreign nationals or residency NGOs who think that, hang on a minute, other foreign nationals have to jump through hoops to get this, but you're giving it to the Chinese spouses.
Well, that's the way it is now, right? That there are more hoops for foreigners who want to naturalize than for Chinese spouses, different timelines. But we could understand that there's some concern about Chinese spouses. You can't ban people from marrying who they want. You know, that would be unconstitutional. And I think Taiwan has a admirably pretty firm view on this, the courts, the constitutional court. In fact, that's why the constitutional court legalized gay marriage as well. I don't think the oath really has any point, simply because if somebody is intent on acquiring Taiwan nationality, ROC nationality, and then doing something on China's behalf, spying for espionage, they're going to do it anyway. So the fact that they took an oath is not going to stop them from engaging in malevolent behavior if that's what their goal is. But a lot of, on the other hand, a lot of countries do have oaths when people nationalize as a citizen. So that wouldn't be unusual. I would say you should probably have it for all people who are not naturalizing as citizens, both Chinese and non-Chinese. As far as the four-year versus six-year, I'm not sure why the Kuomintang thinks this is a winning issue politically, keeping in mind they just lost the election, or at least the presidential election. It's not a high priority. I understand that waiting 6 years does have some practical implications for the Chinese spouses as far as what rights they have here. You know, there's a difference between living here as a foreign spouse or a Chinese spouse versus living here as someone who's already a citizen. I just don't see why now and what are we trying to achieve other than to make a specific constituency happy, either those Chinese spouses or their Taiwan spouse? They'll be happy about this, but those people are probably going to vote for the Kuomintang anyway. And it's not 3 years and 10 months from now, nobody's going to remember this anyway. So I don't see why the urgency to make this a priority in the new legislature.
I don't disagree. I think there is, first, there is a lack of empathy, and then there is a lack of strategy from the Taiwan side. Why empathy? Because you mentioned loops that foreigners go through to get nationality. There is a huge loop and the sacrifice that the Chinese spouse need to go through 6 years before getting a working permit, meaning that only Chinese nationals in Taiwan cannot work once they marry a local citizen. And for those single income families that they are unable to work,
obtaining before obtaining citizenship. It's a huge burden. It's a big challenge for those families. And being, whenever they voice their opinion, to be called a member of the CCP, they're spies in disguise. We're talking about housewife who just stay home all day and waiting patiently to get a chance to get the citizenship. So I think for that, I think there is a real lack of empathy from the side of Taiwan. And the other problem is a lack of strategy, because whether they wait 6, 8, 10 or more years, one day they will get the citizenship, but they will also remember that they waited endlessly and they were called once and again all the time like members of the CCP. So their family will remember it, their children will remember it. We're talking about more than 360,000 families. So it's not really fair. Well, for us foreigners from Western countries, life is much easier, so we should maybe take this into account. Now, adding another loop and asking them now to take an oath, well, if it's the case, we should ask everyone to take an oath, not just the Chinese spouse.
Yeah, as I said earlier, you want to implement the oath, implement it for everyone. It's not unusual around the world to have an oath-taking ceremony as the final step to naturalizing as a citizen. We have that in my country, in the United States. So I think it's pretty reasonable. But you know, as far as this 4 years versus 6 years, when people here marry a Chinese spouse, they know what the rules are. They're free to marry the Chinese spouse, but they have to appreciate what the current regulatory regime is. And even if the regulatory regime changes, they'll have to appreciate what the new regime is. So they're free to marry, but they do have to appreciate that marrying a Chinese spouse as opposed to a spouse from somewhere else, there are some rules that come with that.
And just as we thought the Tsai administration had been taking steps to crack down on stupid drivers in a manner that could actually be of great importance to the pedestrians and ensure that stupid people cease doing stupid things on Taiwan's highways, byways and sidewalks, well, along came the Ministry of Transport this week and decided that some of the new rules were rather draconian and decided to ease the punishments for 10 traffic violations. Those traffic violations include talking on a mobile phone while riding a motorcycle or scooter, reversing a large vehicle without being guided by another person behind said vehicle, reversing a vehicle without paying attention to pedestrians, parking within 5 metres of fire station doors and parking in front of fire hydrants, also illegally parking in designated spaces for the disabled. Now, the Transport Ministry says it chose to ease punishments on what it called minor traffic violations that incur a fine of 1,200 NT or less because police have been overburdened by people reporting such traffic violations. And the move means that motorists who commit such violations under the Road Traffic Management and Penalty Act will no longer get points on their license, and people won't be able to receive any cash rewards for reporting them. The Transport Ministry's move has angered some people, though, with the Taiwan Vision Zero Alliance demanding the cabinet retract the changes. And the alliance, along with other groups, which include the Taiwan Police Union, they're calling for people to take to the streets at 10 a.m. this coming Sunday in cities including Taipei, Taichung and Kaohsiung to voice their opposition to the changes to ensure that the wayward truck driver cannot simply reverse without paying attention to pedestrians.
This issue is getting a lot of attention already for quite a while as public anger grew about pedestrian deaths. And this is a serious problem in Taiwan. People crossing the street getting knocked down by cars that are making illegal turns or speeding through stop signs or red lights. It's a real problem here. And international business community has also expressed its concern about this to the central government. It's unfortunate that they're doing a U-turn, though. It just makes the relevant officials at the Ministry of Transportation and Communications look incompetent.
Incompetent? Who thought of doing? They're gonna downgrade people who talk on mobile phones while riding a motorcycle. What clown came up with that one?
again, it makes them look incompetent. You know, they were slow to address these issues, these legacy dangerous issues that had arisen over time. And they implement a new system, and then shortly thereafter, they undo some of it. It's just not a good moment for the Ministry of Transportation and Communications. I don't know what their excuses are, other than the minister has changed a few times over the last 5 to 10 years. But that shouldn't be an excuse for their incompetence.
The reason is more simple. We've entered a new cycle of elections. We're done with the national elections. We're moving forward with the local elections in 2 years. These regulations are extremely unpopular, costly for some more people, most people, because they just don't care or didn't learn properly how to drive a motorcycle. And so authorities are just having second thoughts on these policies. Yes, foreigners in Taiwan or foreigners outside of Taiwan can just complain or have a great laugh about how people drive motorcycles here. But it just shows how short-sighted local politicians are. With the elections coming, they start preparing and they have started the narrative saying that, oh, we're just making your life easier. And yes, that was a mistake. I don't think it's a mistake. We should enforce strictly enforce regulations. That should be the basic.
Yeah, so, Ross, no, you no longer get any money, mate, or a reward if you report someone parking in front of a fire hydrant. I mean, surely a sensible person would simply take a photo of it and report it. But, of course, they won't do anything about it now because the police are overburdened.
And there's no financial reward.
There's no financial reward either, yeah.
I think people who park in front of fire hydrants should be dealt with very seriously. And I'm not being a wise ass. I genuinely mean that. It's an act of extreme selfishness to park in front of a fire hydrant. But the police are especially in the big cities, we see them zipping around on scooters. So they are literally close to the ground, literally and figuratively. In many jurisdictions around the world, issuing citations for traffic infractions are just part of what police do. So I'm not sure what the police overburden argument is. I think it's just part of the job.
And before we go this week, the government last year was so outraged that ticket scalpers were selling tickets to concerts by K-pop supergroup Blackpink for between 10 and 100 times the value of the original ticket. Well, the government went and amended the Sports Industry Development Act by adding Article 24-1, which seeks to punish ticket scalpers by mandating a maximum of 3 years in prison and or a fine of up to 3 million NT. Well, it appears the amendment has done very little to stem ticket scalping, as the government is now seeking the public's help by introducing new regulations that could see ticket scalping whistleblowers getting a financial reward of up to 100,000 NT. So, Ross, of course, they've taken the money away from people actually reporting people that do stupid things in vehicles, and they're going to give it to people to dib in ticket scalpers.
I think those think tank people from Washington, D.C., who love to call Taiwan a free market, should do a little bit more research and see how the government is trying to interfere with the free market. No one likes to pay more than face value for tickets. But again, supply and demand, free market. The United States, there's in other countries around the world now, there's a large industry for ticket resellers. You know, in the age of apps, it's understandable that people are trying to buy and sell tickets and look for the easiest way to do that. I'm against the scalping penalties. I'm against the whistleblower penalty. I think creating a snitching culture is really not for over this issue. You know, there probably are some legitimate issues where you need to have whistleblowers. This, I think, is not one of them, though.
And of course, Ross, they only amended the law last year.
It's another one of those quick changes, right? Because either they overreached or they underreached. And clearly on this one, they feel like they underreached. So now they are going to overreach.
And of course, Dimitri, we were talking before the show, and Dimitri made a good point because people, of course, purchase tickets in bulk on the internet. And Dimitri, you pointed out that people buying the tickets might not even be in Taiwan.
Yeah, because here, I think this new thing just again shows that the authorities don't have a clue on how addressing this issue. Yes, maybe scalpers and the system they're using, maybe they're not even based in Taiwan. The resellers, some people might be standing and at the entrance of the concert venue, and what is very likely is they're going to catch a student, and then they're going to charge him for, you know, trying to make some money in reselling his ticket or concert ticket. But the problem is again with the system. Now we discussed about the Ministry of Digital Affairs earlier. Of course, the Ministry of Digital Affairs is not in charge of implementing those regulations and restrictions, but the ministry is in charge of, or they can ask the ministry for recommendation to solve this issue. And if they can't solve it, and if the Ministry of Digital Affairs doesn't have a clue how to solve these issues, and then, for example, the MOFA issues, now the question is, why do we have a Ministry of Digital Affairs? It's not impossible to solve, and it's not a Taiwan-only issue. How do other countries sort out these things? Now, there were suggestions, for example, when you buy your ticket, you have to leave maybe personal information, like your ID number or your real name. But the problem in Taiwan, millions of personal ID numbers and names people have managed to grab all these personal information. So this system could not even work in Taiwan. So what is next? We're going to go after students standing at the entrance of the concert.
Dimitri, you posed the question, how do you solve this? Easy. You don't try to regulate ticket reselling. You let you let the free market operate under normal supply and demand principles. And for popular performers or a sporting event that a lot of people want to attend, there'll be heavy demand and the price will go up. That's just how capitalism works. So I don't think the government should try to regulate this. I think they should cease immediately.
Do you remember the price for the tickets to watch the Super Bowl in the U.S.?
Yeah, it's very expensive because it's supply and demand, but it's not the government's job to try and regulate this.
That's where we'll leave it here this week on Taiwan This Week. And I've been joined in the studio today by Dimitri Bouyes.
Well, it's great to be here.
And by Ross Feingold.
Have a great weekend.
And thanks for tuning in to this week's edition of Taiwan This Week here on ICRT with me, Gavin Phipps. And don't forget to check out Taiwan This Week podcast on your favourite podcast app where you can get access to all our previous shows.
Tune in again next Friday evening at 9 for another informative look at the top stories of the week with Taiwan This Week. And don't forget to also check out our podcast on our website, icrt.com.tw. Now keep it here for more music and news only on ICRT FM 100.